conference calls, and I'm going to have a webinar on Oceline, so I don't really want to spend a whole Monday call on it because I'm going to give you so many other options to be involved in Oceline. So just know that that's coming up as well. So keep your eyes open for all that information because I really do believe it's going to make a difference in everybody's business. But let's go back to Veronica Auber. I want to finish this book. It's so terrific. And people, I'm telling you, every time I prepare for another class, I just get blown away by the information that's in his book. And some of you, I know I've been even going to the presidential day before ManaQuest. I can't begin to tell you how many presidentials came up to me and thanked me for pulling this book back out again because they had read it in the past, like many of you may have, and they just, you know, it's one of those things, you read it and you go, oh, wow, this is really great, and then you go on with life and you're not implementing it. And if you don't implement it, it's so what if it's a great book? Then it just remains a great book. This isn't about reading a novel and enjoying a novel because it's a great book. You know, these kind of books, people, are written for us to take and for us to absorb and make changes in our life. If we want things to be different, who's got to be different? We do. So that's what Michael Oliver is all about, is to give us a new approach to networking that is an effective approach, and it takes away so many of the things that we feel uncomfortable about. So let's dig in and talk about his next chapter, his next group, is a principle about helping people solve their problems. That's the next part of the group, which covers three chapters, and we'll go through each one of those in the book and see what we can pull from what he tells us in this one. The first concept about helping people solve their problems, the first concept that he has in the first chapter is about the power of dialogue, and really important to make a distinction about dialogue. But let's jump in and talk about first the lay the foundation of what is the model of selling. So many of you are out there selling and you're persuading people and telling people about, you know, how great your products are and how great this is and how great the business opportunity, and you need to do this and this is why you need to do it, and you have all the advantages and all the benefits of why they need to do this, and you just really hound, and people look at you and they look like deer in headlights, or they just shut down immediately and they say, I'm not interested, before you even get five words out of your mouth. When people can do that to you and people are reacting to you that way, I want you to stop right now and I want you to say, I'm never going to do that again. Today's your day that you're making the resolution. You're never doing that again. And why are you never going to do it again? Because it doesn't work. And some of the results that you're getting, if you go, well, Mary Jo, that's not how I do it, well, then let's look at results that are triggered by a similar approach like that. Do you get uncomfortable when people say no to you? In other words, can you handle rejection? Does it work for you? Do you get frustrated when you're talking and you don't seem to be able to get your point across? In other words, the other person interrupts or you just don't seem to be getting ahead with what you're trying to accomplish on your agenda. After you go out and you have a successful week, let's say you sign up a couple people, do you tend to stop sharing, slow down, and then get into management mode because you just signed up a number of people? Are you afraid to ask for the order? Because when you're asking for the order and you try to get them to buy something, my gosh, you're going to be making money off of them, and that's embarrassing, and that's not very ethical, and you feel uncomfortable about it, so you're not going to do it, and you feel uncomfortable, so you're closing the person on purchasing your product. How about, are you uncomfortable when you actually receive the money? You get a check in the mail and you go, oh, I made this money off of sales when selling my friends and my relatives, and that's how I made this money, and it causes some discomfort. If these are any of the results that you're having from how you're approaching your Manatech business, Michael Oliver is going to tell you the reason you do is because you're doing it the wrong way. It's because you're going after being in control, selling mode, marketing mode, you know, I'm going to persuade people to do this, and I'm going to, you know, motivate them. I'm going to be the one that's going to teach them and push them and lead and mold them and direct them to do what's right for their lives because I know what's right for them. And you're uncomfortable with all of those results that you're creating, and you're creating the results I just listed because you're self-focused, you're adversarial, and the approach you're using does not connect with your soul. Anyone feel that way with how they've been doing network marketing or network marketing in of itself? Anyone on the call today want to just share? Does this hit a home run ball with anyone?
Hey, Mary Jo, it's Russ.
Hey, Russ.
I think that if we could find a way to share this and do this where it really connected with our souls, we would never stop.
There you go. Absolutely. Absolutely. You would never stop. And you would become, Russ, unstoppable.
Yep.
And if you become unstoppable, you would all make presidential. Are you following me?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. But it's because it's not connecting with your soul. There's something disconnective happening between the methods you're using, the approach, the model, and what you feel is right internally inside of you. It's kind of like living outside of your value structure. You know, that's why I do that value analysis for people in Pathway, because I want you to live within your value structure. You know, when you start working outside the realm of your value structure, you're not going to be very effective and you're not going to be successful because you have an internal incongruity which has to justify itself before you can move forward. And as long as it's incongruous with what's internal to you and most important and inconsistent with what's in your soul, you're not going to be able to move forward with it effectively. You could do it superficially for a while. It could work for a while. You might even get to presidential, killing yourself. But the inconsistency will eventually seep in and you will seep back to a point where you're most comfortable, which is living in accordance with your values, not out of accordance. So the idea, he sets all this up beautifully because, you know, I hear these things from the field all the time. I hear the discomfort, the frustrations. I hear all of that. And Michael Oliver saying that's logical because of the approach you're taking. It's your method and your model of selling and telling and convincing and cajoling and manipulating and persuading. And I'm not even talking about going back to the old manipulation techniques of the 50s and 60s in network marketing and selling. I'm talking about how a lot of people do it today. A lot of the mechanisms and methods that come out today are manipulation and persuading and all these kinds. It's going to cost us a sacrifice we're eventually not going to make. We might make it in the short run, but we're not going to make it long term because it's so inconsistent with who we are and our value structure. So we look at that and we say, you know, asking, and it even goes so far as to some people say, and I've seen this training in Manitech, asking someone what they would do if they could. Okay, so you know, it's kind of like this. You go, hey, my name's so-and-so, how are you, da, 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 and they say, well, what do you do for a living, da, da, da. And you go, you look at them, you go, well, what would you like to do? Here's you're having this conversation. Go, if you could do anything you'd like to do in your life, every day of your life, what would you choose to do? And they go, well, that's a good question. I probably would like to sail around the world. I love sailing, and I love. Well, if I could show you a way to do that, would you do it? Would you be interested? See, that's an approach that's out there in Manitech. In fact, it's you know, one of the approaches that I've shown people that, you know, but it's, as Michael Oliver says, you know, it's not bad in the long-term approach, but it's way too fast. You're impatient. You're trying to do something so quick, the person isn't even ready. They're not even prepared. And you haven't laid the foundation of love, trust, and confidence in a relationship that needs to be there for you to start suggesting that you somehow have this answer for their life. Yet we try to do it all the time because we want that person, you know, we want to meet somebody and we want that all-star pack like in the next hour or we lose patience. But that's not what life is about. It's not surely what natural selling is about. So let's look at what we need to be doing differently and look at what this is about. He outlines three main communication modes. There are three main communication modes. One is, which is the least persuasive, is when we tell people things or attempt to dominate them. And that we do through presenting, telling, teaching, persuading. That's the mode that we find ourselves in most of the time. And that's what makes most network marketers pretty miserable because they're doing exactly that. In that mode, you know, presentations, you know, are like you sit down with somebody and you go, okay, I got this great laptop presentation. I'm going to go out to lunch with them. I'm going to roll through this laptop and we're going to get this thing done. And I don't know, some of you might say, hey, I'm here, Joe, I've been doing that for years. How is it working for you? That one-on-one presentation keeps who in control? You're in control the whole time. Who is it all about? It's all about you, right? But why do we do it? Why do we take on this kind of presentation mode? Because it's easy, it's safe. We don't have to worry about what they might say or responding to them, so we don't have to go into the unknown. We can stay in the known the whole time we're around the person, and we only have to learn how to do it once. We build that presentation, we memorize our script, and, man, we're ready to go out there and churn. And we'll go churn and churn and churn and churn and churn. And that's what we end up doing. It's easy. We only have to learn once. But the biggest problem with it is, and there are numerous problems, one is, can you motivate people through that? Well, if you build a heck of a good presentation, you might motivate somebody. But the problem is that real motivation for people comes from within the person, not from outside the person. It's kind of like motivational seminars. You can run to those too, and you can get really hyped up. Go see, you know, Jim Rohn, and you can get totally turned on. You jump in your car, you drive home, somebody tries to cut you off on the freeway, and you get angry and start screaming at them because they cut you off on the freeway, and guess what happened to all your motivational seminar? It just dissipated like on a click of a finger. That's how quick. And that's what happens in presentations. So you might get them motivated. That's another reason why people kept on saying all the time with network marketing, sign them while they're hot. You got to get them right then. Sign them up right then. They made it, just get them right then, because if you let them wait 24 hours, they're not going to do it. Well, because you're getting the spur of the moment. You're getting the emotionalism, the state of the moment right then and right there. But when you do that, what happens is that's the kind of person that quits 3 months later because they made exclusively an emotional decision. They didn't make a rational decision that fit with where they are, where they came from, their present reality, and where they want to go in the future. They made it purely on an emotional basis. So he's suggesting that's one of the least persuasive mechanisms for us to use is presentations. And the reason being that when you do a presentation, it's really a whole aggregation of kind of guesswork. Why? Because how many different things could motivate a person? How many different reasons they could possibly have to want to do this business, right? All you have to do is interview a bunch of people that made Presidential and Manatech, and you're going to find out we all had incredibly distinct backgrounds. We have very different reasons for even being involved in Manatech, and we have very different reasons why we continue pursuing Manatech. So there could be 101 different reasons out there that somebody's going to do it. When you do a presentation, how do you capture that individual's specific reason why they might do it? In order to capture it, you have to do a presentation that covers 101 different possibilities. So now you have to do a presentation that takes 2.5 hours, and even if you happen to touch on theirs, they probably are going to be a deer in headlights or in the ozone or drifting somewhere else in the meantime because you said so many things that have absolutely no application to them that they don't see for their lives. So what you're doing in doing that one-on-one presentation type thing with a memorized script and a memorized thing is you're all about guesswork about what's going to motivate them. Running through all the reasons why until you might happen to just trip on theirs. But, wow, is that not totally one-sided and very untargeted? You see the difference there. Now, can presentations be good in some instances? Yeah, I'll tell you the instance a presentation is good. And this is, I'm talking about a set-fixed presentation. A presentation is really terrific when you have a group of massive numbers of people because you want to try to impact as many. But the most important part of that presentation isn't the presentation, it's the aftermath of the presentation. It's you taking your prospect that you brought to that presentation and sitting down with them, and the first question out of your mouth should be, so what did you enjoy most about what you just heard? So many of us, we take people to presentations, we go, okay, let's get signed up. Are you ready to get started? Right? Yeah, wow, we just blew it again. The concept is get to find out what they enjoyed most about the presentation. What did you enjoy most? You're going to start finding out about that person, about their current reality, about what's impacting their life today, about what their need might be. That's where you want to go. So that's why you ask those questions. That's the same question I ask if I send somebody a DVD in the mail. I also want to ask it because I want to keep it on a positive note. And I'll say, did you get a chance to watch a DVD? Yeah, Mary Jo, in fact, I did. And I go, great. Could you tell me what did you enjoy most about the DVD? What really hit home to you? And I listen. I want them to be telling, not me. We feel like we always have to be the forget it. I'm the asker. I am the asker because I am playing Sherlock Holmes. I am in the discovery process. I want to know as much about this person as I can. And so that's the joy about what we step up and step into as we interact with people, is try to find out about them. And that's why, again, least persuasive. When we're tellers, we're least persuasive because we're not addressing that person's specific targeted needs. We're just like going out there with a howitzer trying to, maybe one of these will hit them. And that's another reason why, as a presenter, I'll just tell you from my perspective, because I go around the country and do presentations, and, you know, it took me a long time to formulate the presentation I do, Let's Go Natural, that presentation, and so much of it in my business presentation. And it's always based on what can stimulate people, where are the hot points that people have, and I have to consider 100 of them when I build a presentation because I don't know who's going to be in the audience. So when I do a presentation, I go from analytical, heavy science to I go to hilarity. I laugh a lot. I get people to laugh. I get people to cry. I get people to, you know, I mean, I try every angle in one presentation because I don't know who's in the audience that night, and I have to try to touch all those people. So if you really are conscientious about being a presenter, you are always putting pressure on yourself to try to touch people from all the different personality quadrants, all the different backgrounds, and boy, that is tough, people. That is tough. And so one-on-one, stay away from that mode because you have one person in front of you, and all that's important in the moment is what? That you touch their lives. So what's most important? What is their current reality? And that's what you need to pursue. So again, the least persuasive when we're tellers. The other things he brought up, the two fears people have around presentations is, number one, that you're going to persuade them to do something they don't want to do, immediate fear. And number two, how much time are you going to take? And all of you on this call know that, because how many times have you invited people to go to presentations? And a lot of them don't show up because they're afraid you're going to persuade them to do something they don't want to do. Or the other thing, the first thing out of their mouth is, well, how much time is it going to take? Right? And it's crazy. And then some of you live in places where it takes an hour to get to the presentation, then they got to be at an hour and a half presentation, then they got to get an hour to be home. I mean, you know, people are just time conscious today too. That's why, you know, doing presentations sometimes isn't the most effective unless it's, you know, local. It's something easy for people to access. All right. So again, one-on-one memorizing, structure, telling, being the telling mode is least persuasive. More persuasive of that is when we get into an interaction with people and we discover from each other. So we get into what they call a discussion and debate mode. Now, this isn't the best form of communication or influence with people because, again, what you try to do in discussions and debates is you try to win the person over to your viewpoint. And how many of us in Manatech try to do that every day? I'm going to say that's real high on that list. Because we meet people who don't think nutrition is proper, and we meet this, and then we get right into that driving mode about, well, we're going to show them that we know what we're talking about. How is that working for you? So you sit there and you're trying to change somebody's viewpoint. Again, you're getting into the persuasion mode. Your object is to win. Okay, you're taking on, that's your approach to the whole, how do I recognize when I'm doing that, Mary Jo? Well, it's real easy. When you hear the other person talk and your immediate response is, yes, but, see, you're acknowledging them with the yes, but, you're putting a but right after it because you want to make sure that you get your pointer in and you win your point. So it's about more of a who's going to win the debate instead of giving priority to the other person, which is the way Michael Oliver is suggesting we approach prospects and people and find people and reach out to people to share solutions with people. So we give priority to the other person and what they mean and what they know and where they are. And why is it hard to do that? Why is it hard to open up and give priority to other people? Because one of the things that you've been taught is to always focus on targeting the outcome of the sale. And, you know, I can tell you in my teachings, I talk about, you know, when I meet somebody and they ask me what I do, my brain immediately goes to, where am I going to put them in my downline? Now, that's not targeting them on a sale. It's just that it's my mechanism. It's just my natural mechanism. I can't do much about it because it naturally occurs for me. But it's an idea, too, that I always take a positive approach to the interaction. I come across very positive, not hesitant, very bold, very open, because I just know that after our conversation, there's a real huge possibility that that person will start doing Manitech. But I don't put it as my target goal. In other words, it's not guiding and directing my agenda in the conversation. You got to leave it out of your agenda as in a conversation. You've got to just come from authentic and natural and find out what the person's needs are, because it could be that their need is totally different from ours. It's one of the reasons we don't find a lot of business builders, is because we never find out people need income. Or the minute we find out they don't have any income, we walk away and try to find somebody else who can afford the products, instead of presenting this program as an incredible opportunity to solve that problem that they have. Because, you know, what we like to do is we like to tell people, oh, my gosh, these products are terrific. You need to take them. Oh, you know, your daughter has this or you have this, and you have to take these products. Oh, my gosh, they're just going to make such a difference in your life. And you want it online. And the poor person goes, well, we don't have the money to do that. And you go, oh, but let me tell you, I can show you how to make the money, because all you have to do is you get started and we'll get some people underneath you. And but you're still all about taking the product. If maybe when the person says we don't have money, you go, you know what, let's talk about that. What does that mean for you in your life? And start working with them around not having enough money. What's the problem? And start digging in the past, the present situation they're in, all these kind of things, and then approach Manitech from the business opportunity. Because telling people you can help them get their products for free doesn't, does that work for you guys? I don't know. Is it working for anyone? Anyone on the call? You want to respond? Is it working for you? When somebody says they don't have money, how many other people that have told you they don't have money, and trust me, I know there's a lot of them out there because they do it all the time. It's one of the ways that they really do have money, but it's one of the ways to say no to you. But when you tell them, well, but listen, hey, all you got to do is, you know, we'll just build a team of six and da-da-da, and we'll get, is that working for anyone on this call? Come on, you guys, come and get off of mute and tell me how well that's working for you.
It's not working at all.
Thank you, Russ. It's not working at all, is it?
Not a one person in the last 5 months that I've talked to that told me they didn't have money has ever gotten started,
right,
regardless of my discussion about free products.
Isn't that incredible? Doesn't that just blow you away? You go, there's got to be something I'm doing wrong. Well, that's why you're on the call this morning, because the problem is you're still focused on the product. When people conclude that they don't have money, so they can't afford the product, and you go, oh, but let me show you how you can afford to buy these products. Why aren't we making it about, wow, tell me about what's going on in your financial life? Why aren't we getting concerned about what's happening in their financial life? You see what's so incredible? We're so caught up in the products that we forget to acknowledge that what you have here is an incredible business tool to build some income stream for this family, so you can solve that problem. We always want to relate it to buying the products. Well, most people, once they've made the psychological determination they don't have money to afford the products, they're not going to jump over and go, oh, great, so I can get – that's not a normal flow of a brain pattern. They've already determined they don't have the money. You don't even understand. They're listening to you tell them how to afford the products in their life when you don't even understand their financial status, because you haven't taken the time to talk to them about that. Isn't that intriguing? We're trying to solve a problem of theirs, and we haven't even taken the time to understand the depth of the problem that they have. Intriguing. Let me ask you, would you take advice from somebody who didn't even care about finding out the depth of the problem you have or understanding it? Would you take advice from them? I don't know. I probably wouldn't, because how much do they really care about what my problem is when all they want to do is tell me what I should do, instead of understand where I am? Wow. Big, isn't this? Intriguing. So is everybody following me on this? Is this going over your head? Because I want you to get this. It's about shifting. When somebody says, I don't have money, it's about shifting. It's not about the team bonus. It's about shifting into, wow, let's talk about that. It's a new approach to helping somebody. Yeah, and I'm going to tell you, that's the winner. That's the winning line. That's the winning approach. It's about asking more questions. It's not about a pounding down the same stream that's not working. It's about getting into what their true need is in their life and finding out how their past is controlling the present and how the present is denying them a future and dealing with those kind of issues. And then building a picture for them about why are we going to continue allowing the past to control your future. For you, let's talk about building a better tomorrow where you can start affording these products and you can start affording what your dream is, which you're going to tell me, because in our discussion about what your problem is, we're going to figure that out as well. Whew. Yeah, motivation from within, not from without, motivation from within. You're not going to motivate somebody from within if you don't care about what their problem is and you don't put time and energy into helping work through that with them. And that doesn't mean you have to be a financial planner or an expert or an ex. All you got to do is ask a few more questions. You got it? All you guys can do that. It's not offensive. You can go, well, Mary Jo, that's kind of intrusive. Well, it's going to be intrusive if it's the first thing you ask a person. Tell me about your financial life. You know, that's kind of, but how did you get to the conversation where you're already talking about the products for their kids if you hadn't gotten into a prior conversation with them? So building that rapport to make it comfortable to do that. And when somebody talks about we don't have a cash flow, and you can say, wow, what's going on in your life? You know, what's happening there that you can't afford $100 a month? Let's talk about it. Because this is something serious. I'm more interested in helping you get beyond that at this stage, because that's a more reality. That's a reality check. That's where they are. That's where they're stuck. We got to help them get unstuck from that. The only thing that would make somebody get unstuck from that is if their daughter were dying of something and you somehow had convinced them the only product in the world that would help support them would be, you know, one of our products, which would be against compliance because we're not into the, you know, prescribing business anymore. We're only in a wellness business. But let's say that's the only time somebody would be desperate enough, because their internal motivation to save the life of their child is greater than whatever their financial status is today. You follow me? But that's not true about the majority of people. So how do we get that internal motivation going? We hit them where they really are going to be motivated, which is to solve the most important problem in their life, which is, so it really is a shift for us. Okay, so that's the idea. So we get to, okay, so that's where we're going to convert. We're moving away from debate and discussion and being right and being on our agenda and going, yes, but, oh, you don't have $100. Yes, but let me tell you about the team bonus, and I can show you how to, wrong. We're back into discussion and debate about my viewpoint, my persuasion, and I'm going to show you I'm right, and we're not giving you priority in where you are. We're making our agenda the priority instead of yours. So the third way communication technique is most effective is when we let other people persuade themselves. We open a dialogue. It's called dialogue is what he calls it. It allows you to find out the essence of a person, okay? You're opening yourself up to finding out the essence of a person. You open up to create a field of energy that makes people compelled to listen to you and your ideas because you listen to them and their ideas, because you ask questions and you're truly intrigued and interested in that person. The purpose of dialogue is to go beyond each person's understanding so that collectively both can be more insightful and intelligent than they are individually. What is this about? It's about creating synergy. It's about, you know what, one of us can do this and one of us can do and the other one can do that. But if we can do this and that together, 1+1=5. We can create incredible synergy in our relationship. Did I hear somebody have something to say? No. Anyway, it's a collective thought or truth that you're trying to create here. It's about a joint endeavor. When I work with somebody, it's about how can we jointly accomplish a task together? How can I contribute in your life and you in mine that we can create a result that's critically important to you and it meets your needs, not my needs, but meets yours? How do we do this? How do we create that synergism? And it's intriguing. It's so much fun. It really is about the core of what natural selling is, which is helping other people. It's helping solutions in other people's lives. You can't solve other people's lives if you don't listen to them, if you don't ask them the right questions, if you don't get to the depth of what their needs are in there, you know, and then you sit back and you're willing to say, hey, I want to support you in this. And, you know, and it's, you know, I started doing this more and more over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years because I came to the realization that every single person in this world has something to offer me. Every single person, no matter who they are. And I didn't used to always feel that way in my life. I, you know, law school and lawyering didn't do that to me. But boy, oh boy, has it totally changed my persona. I mean, it's a joy to be out there hugging and loving on people and just finding what's going on in their lives and how do I support you and what's happening. What's, you know, you got some needs today that I can support you with. What does that look like? Creating synergy that we can, the two of us can create something better. Synergistic in the church, synergistic in my family life, synergistic in, you know, all that foundation. It's synergy, synergy. It's about, as a team, we create so much more. So look at this person as a team member with you and say, what do we create together? Well, first of all, I want to create something in your life that you really want to have created. So let's talk about that. And that person that doesn't have the money could care less about Amber Toast right now. They might want to take it, but you know what? They're on the tightest budget they've ever been on. And this is true about a lot of people today, and it's only going to get worse. So it's time that we sit down and say, you know what? Let's talk about how tight that budget is. What's happened to you? What's going wrong? Oh, my husband lost his job. And you get into it with them. And you talk about what their current reality is, and you find out what in their past that has created their current reality, what do they view in the future. And then you help create a better future with them, not for them, with them. It's a team concept, and it's got to be their motivation, not your motivation, their motivation. I know we're all motivated to help people. I know that because I know I've heard from every one of you in the field. Mary Jo, how can we want products more than other people do? And I said, it happens all the time. You want the products more than they do. You want it for them more than they do. You want a better life for them more than they want a better life. But I'm going to suggest that happens because we never get deep enough into conversation with them and ask enough questions to get to the depths of what's going on in their life so that they can get a better sense of their, you know, reality they've created and then be able to link that to a better future for them. All those steps have to be taken. We just can't jump ahead of ourselves. And that takes dialogue. Help people work out their inconsistencies or their own thoughts, come to their own conclusions, and be more open to the idea of change. Because most of these people don't see change. They want it, but they don't see it. And, you know, dangling a carrot's not going to make the difference for them. So get rid of your expectations. Detach yourself from your own expectations. The mechanics of dialogue are suspending your own assumptions by releasing your assumptions and judgments and prejudices. You've got to release all of that. You just become open up to the other person. And this is hard because it's not about debating or arguing or defending, and you're going to bite your tongue 100 times when you do this. But it's about the law of reciprocity. You listen intently to everything they say, and they listen openly to you. So it's a way you open them up. And you are so caught up in trying to support them. It's a law of reciprocity. It happens. It's a reality. It's a universal law. And how do you offer a new idea? You go, well, Mary Jo, I can open up and I can do all this stuff, but, you know, we're going down the path. How do I ever enter into the picture and say, you know, what if I want to make a suggestion for him? Well, you do it softly and gently because it's not about you manipulating or being on an agenda. When you get to the point where you're ready to do that, which means, you know, you've got that incredible openness and honesty flowing and everybody's interacting and they've got their present reality in front of you and they're ready to look towards the future, then you can say something, what if there was another way of looking at it? It's a great way to bring it. What if there's another way of looking at that? Another way that would give you everything you wanted without any of the discomfort associated with your present way of doing things. See how soft that is? I mean, it's not about, hey, you know, you ought to do this because you could have this, 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 and this. No. What if there was another way? So see, the language changes a little bit. It's softer. It's gentler. It's more about a possibility. Offering that there might be a possibility out there. But they've got to believe a possibility before they're going to believe what you say. So you're building a platform to be able to tell them what you have to tell. But just throwing it at them is not going to work. Okay, so suspend your assumptions. Number two, become colleagues. Focus on understanding the other person. We just went through all that. Look for synergy with them. You know, try to form solutions together. Focus on the present. Live in the moment. Don't try to live in the future. And we're going to talk about that in a minute as well. It's that whole idea about asking somebody, you know, what do you want in life if you could have whatever you want? Okay, what if I could show you how to get that? I mean, that, wow. You know, look at all the steps you've missed. You've missed the past. You missed the pain. You missed the reciprocity. You missed the sharing. You missed the, you know, building the camaraderie. You've missed all the trust in the relationship. You just expect somebody to believe you because you're some kind of, you know, flim-flam man that drove up in the most recent wagon selling his, you know, his little oil to solve all, cure-all oil. Not... Okay, and the third way to mechanics of dialogue is that you're the facilitator. This is intriguing, that you facilitate a conversation. View yourself as a facilitator in a conversation, meaning that you're what? Stepping into a conversation on a mode of helping the conversation move in a direction that's beneficial to both parties. So you become a facilitator in the conversation. You also get to sit back and observe yourself because facilitators observe. And the most incredible thing is to be able to participate in what's happening in the conversation. And if you haven't ever done that before, I want you to do that today. Take it upon yourself to, and even a conversation with your spouse. Have a conversation with your spouse and be a facilitator. Be an observer of what's going on in the conversation. See if you can separate yourself from being active in that conversation at the same time as being active. And it's an incredible... It's an incredible tool to use in conversing with people because it really allows you to see and come up with new approaches, because otherwise we get so caught up in our own approach. So it allows you to see more synergistic results than to just be, you know, tied to one. So those are the concepts behind mechanics of dialogue. And if you're uncomfortable with them because you haven't ever used them, I want you to start today. I want you to just take it on today. Have a conversation. Bring your sheet of paper around, even this little sheet of paper, and have a conversation with somebody and see how you do. And don't you know, give yourself straight F's if you fail at it, because you're not going to be proficient with it unless you continue to try it and work on it. But exercising it is what's going to create the greatness of you in doing it. And then you adjust your future, because every time you practice it, you learn how you're not doing it, how you're not getting it done. But that's the way you work with creating dialogue. Next, we only have a few minutes left. Wow, I spent a lot of time. That was the most important chapter out of the three, I think, because the other ones, well, they're all important, but that one had the most incredible, you know, information to share to just move people, so I thought I'd spend some time on that. The second chapter was about current reality. Any fool can come up with the answers, but the real measure of wisdom is coming up with the right questions. I thought that was a great quote out of the book. Most people live in their past, right? So when you come up with them, this is what we talked about earlier, when you come up to them and you say, you know, hey, you know, what do you want more of in your life? Let me show you how you can get that. Golly, you get it. People can't make that connectiveness. For the most part, people can't make that connectiveness. Because most people are living in their past. And statistics show that out. And I get plenty of them in the book, and I'm not going to get a chance to read them all. But they've gotten to a certain point in their lives and they've accepted it and they've built a defenses around it to maintain it, not believing in anything better. This is why you get so frustrated with people, because you say, how can they be so stuck? Well, they're stuck. The idea isn't how can they be. The idea is they are. So what are you going to do about it? Don't get frustrated. But maybe work with them to see if there's a possibility that they can see their lives differently, because unless they see their lives differently, they're never going to move forward. And you may be the exact person, the facilitator, you may be that agent of change in their lives. But it's not going to work because you tell them they have to change. It's only going to work because somehow you get them self-motivated internally to want and desire that change so much that they take action to do it. Different approach. And why don't people live in the present? Because it's too painful. We have failed dreams, unfulfilled circumstances. We look at our lives and we go, you know, I hear people do this all the time. I hear people around me do it all the time. I could do it. I could sit there and go, oh, if I only would have. Oh, get rid of woulda, coulda, shoulda in your life. Get rid of them. Everything that happened to you happened for a purpose in your life. Now move out of control today. Today's a new day. You guys all have the rest of Monday. It's 11 o'clock Central Standard Time. You got the rest of the day to create whatever future you want to create. But the woulda, coulda, shouldas will sure rob from you. But that's where people live. Because today is too painful for them to live in. So how do you help people? You've got to ask questions. And we're going to talk about how those questions look. That's part of the future trainings in this book. But it's about learning about their past, bringing it into the present moment. If you don't get people to deal with their present circumstances, they will never make a future. Because you see, it's kind of, I remember teaching you guys a book by Robert Fritz called Life is Art. And in there he talked about creative tension, that you have to create, for change to occur, for resolution to happen, you have to create creative tension. Creative tension is about what is your present circumstance and what is it that you want in your life? What is your better tomorrow? And when you can't deal with your present circumstances, you can never create the tension between today and tomorrow because it's based on a false. So if you lie about your current facts, you're never going to create a better tomorrow. You can't. Because you're not dealing with your present reality. You're not creating the creative tension between your reality today and what you want in the future. And that's exactly the same concept that that Michael Oliver deals with. He's talking about you need to bring the past into the present, into the present moment, and then talk about the future, bringing it into the present. So that's what you need to be working with on people, is to work with them on what is your present reality. That's why when somebody says, I don't have the $100, I go, wow, tell me about that. What's going on for you? What's happened in your life? You know, is the economy what's killing you or what's going on? And I let them tell me. I want to know about it. I want them to be, and some of you don't want to do it because you say, oh, my God, that's just going to cause them pain. Are you kidding? They need to be in that posture. They need to grapple with their current reality. Don't let them keep running from it. I mean, you can. You can just say, oh, next, go to the next person. You can do that. Then you're going to have to talk to 10,000 people. But I'm telling you, talk about what their current reality is. And one of the reasons we're not good at this, can I tell you what I think is one of the main reasons we're not good at this? Probably somebody in the audience today could tell me that too. Because so many of us don't live in our current reality either. We don't want to grapple with our current reality. So how is it that we're going to be able to walk into somebody's life and help them grapple with theirs when we're running from our own? Take that one and think about it. That's a tough one. So I'm going to suggest to you all that if that's where you find yourself, I want you to start grappling with that current reality. Take it on. I mean, I have some people that say, oh, Mary Jo, I'll never get out of debt. I don't even want to look at it. I don't want to look at the picture. I don't want to. And I go, boy, that's really helping you move forward in life. Or people that have so much clutter. I gave a seminar on clutter. And somebody said, oh, I got so much clutter in my life. I'm never going to clean it up. So why would I tackle it? I'm like, what? I said, I want you to tell me, if you put 1 hour a day aside, every single day, starting today, to dispose of clutter in your life. That's all you could do. You can't answer the phone. You can't watch TV. You can't deal with anything else. You spend 1 full hour digging through the clutter around your house. How long do you think it'd take for you to clean all that out? And they go, well, I don't know. But I said, 2 months? Maybe? I said, 60 hours? 80 hours? How much time do you need? I said, but if you started 1 hour a day and you started today, where could you be in 2 months or 3 months? But you're telling me it's never going to happen. I see what we do? We convince ourselves of things that are totally false. We can tackle any problem. We can tackle any problem. But it's, you got to put forth a plan, and then you got to have discipline to follow it. So it's about, you know, dealing with our current, our present reality, and we need to do that if we're going to help people deal with their current reality. So it's about, you know, helping people change. That's what our life is. But we can't help people change unless we grapple with them, what their past is controlling their current, and then being able to, because when we talk about their future, when you talk about a dream with somebody and you talk about what they want in their life, and you got to connect it to their present. There's got to create that creative tension between the present, and they can't do that unless they deal with their present where it is today. So they have to be able to, willing to see themselves in the present. Otherwise, they'll continue living in whatever the past is that is controlling their present. Because that's why they don't want to grapple with present, because whatever's happened in the past is what's controlling them, so they don't want to deal with their present. And they can't move forward into the future, no matter how nice a dream board you build for them, if they're not finished grappling with their present. So creative tension creates change, and that's, you are the change agent, right? And then the last element, the last chapter, is the discovery process. And this is the core concept of all of natural selling. Because it gets to, you know, number one is we're here to serve other people. And the core concept of being able to serve other people is to go through the discovery process with them. Most people do not see the world as it is. They see the world as they are. Isn't that a great statement, Anna and the King and I? It's a great statement. So your first goal is to do what? In a relationship with people, when you're working with prospects and you're working with people, is the first people is that, does the person have a problem with their present situation? So you're grappling with their present situation. Is there a problem that exists in their present situation? And maybe they're not telling you all of it, but you got to be Sherlock Holmes, and that's why you become a proficient question asker, because you just want to ask as many questions as you need to find out, do they have a problem? The second thing you need to answer is whether or not they have a desire to change it. There are going to be people that don't have a desire to change it, and then there are going to be people that do have a desire to change it, right? And how you do it? You ask questions, you listen intently, and you respond to their answers. And the way you respond to their answers is with more questions, not with solutions, with more questions. Their current reality, which means fired, which are controlling their current reality for them. The present moment for them, where are they right now, at this moment, and what their future desires are. That's what you're going to be driving those questions at. The result of the person buying will not be based on your salesmanship, but it's going to be rather on the trust they have. They have of you, right? The trust they have in you, and that you know them, you know their needs, and you care about affecting results for them that they want, not you want, that they want for themselves. I'm going to tell you, people, the integrity of this process is what will create the results for you. And I attached on the outline a copy of the discovery process that came out of his book, and you can review that because we haven't gone through all of it, but it's part of that. That's where your questions come from, and you can look at that discovery process. The logical conclusions, if they're content with their current situation, okay, let's say you go, remember, there's three things that you're trying to find out. Does a person have a problem with their present situation? Okay, that's number one. If they're content with their current situation, that's when they tell you, no, I'm not interested. Do you understand what happens when you're going through this process? When you use this method and this process of discovery, and the people say they're content with their current situation, they're not interested in changing their current situation, you are incredibly overwhelmed with joy. You get to go, wow, I have so much joy, and I have so much gratitude. I am so thankful that you are where you want to be in life. Because you're focusing on them, and if they're happy, and they're happy, and they know where they are, and if you show disappointment that they didn't buy your product when they're totally content with where they are, you're coming from lack. And when you come from lack or scarcity, you're going to be rewarded with more of it. So I'm telling you, knock that whole thing off. And some of you go, well, Mary Jo, but I know they really want it. I know it's really, well, you know what? Then you haven't spent enough time in the discovery process, have you? That's the problem that's underlying all of this. So many of us don't spend enough time in the discovery process. We haven't discovered their need. We haven't opened up. We haven't gotten to the point where they're willing to share it, because we haven't shown that we really care about what's going on in their lives. So what are we missing? That we're missing the process. We're going after just trying to tell them what they want. Again, their motivation comes internally from inside them, not from you. If it's from you, it's external and it's temporary. If it's internal, watch what happens. Okay, so that's, if they're content, that's great. If they're unhappy with their situation but unwilling to do anything about it, you know, that happens. There are a lot of people like that too. They're stuck, you know, and you can work with them and you talk about their past and their present current reality and try to build it in the future, and they still look at you because they're people that just don't like to change. Are you getting this? They're people that just don't like change. They don't want change. They don't want change. They can't even see it. They're so stuck in their mire. But you know what? You were that light, that little tidbit of light of joy in their life for that temporary time period that you interacted with them, whether it's a week or 2 weeks or whatever time, you gave them joy. And that's what you're here to do. So you can walk away from those people and you can have empathy for them, but, you know, you don't get discouraged. Don't let their stuff control you. You made a contribution in their life. They weren't willing to take it a next step further. A-okay. Next. Because, you know, eventually, if enough people knock on that door, maybe they'll move. But you've at least opened their eyes to the potential that they have. And then the final category is unhappy people who are really, they do have a problem with their current reality, but they're totally willing to make a change. Now, this is where you can really make a difference. And that's where you belong, actively operating out of that category. Okay, and then we talk about listening, and I'm not going to go much into listening. I gave you a listening test at the end of the outline. Take it authentically. And next week, that's what we're going to jump into. The next part of the section is going to be how to listen, what to listen for. All of those things are going to be answered in next week's class on Michael Oliver, because it's the next principle that we're going to go on, going into is listening to what is being meant, not just what is being said. So we're going to be talking about how to listen effectively, knowing what to listen for, and presenting your solution. That's our next session. Okay, people, any questions? Does this help anybody? Okay, so I got help by it. I'm happy.
I'm happy. Okay, Angela, absolutely great.
Is it different than when you read the book before? Some of you read this book before and you never got this out of it, I bet. Wow. Powerful stuff, people.
Mary Jo, it really gives you freedom.
I tell you,
free.
Total freedom, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Total freedom.
Mary Jo, you got me motivated.
Okay. And it's Monday morning, so you got a whole week to show you, kick in that motivation. Okay.
You're teaching us to go from my heart.
Great. Come from your heart. It's right.
Mary Jo, I think you hit a lot of nails on the head.
Yep. Love you guys. Well, you guys have a great, take it and run with it. Have a great week. I know somebody's cutting in and out.
Hello.
We'll be in touch about Oseline and all the other things. Love you all. Have a great, great week, and we'll talk.
Mary Jo. Mary Jo. Mary Jo.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Mary Ann. Are you having a call tonight?
No, the I can't call is going to be next Monday night. We're doing it every other Monday night now, the second and fourth Mondays of the month. I am going to do a special call coming up, which I'll announce on Oseline, and that'll be this week sometime. And we're also doing a webinar on Oseline. We're going to be formulating both of those. It's just, I have so much on my platter to get out the booklet and the brochure on Oseline and really help people take this and market it well. That's my priority for the week, so I'm really concentrating on that. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Are you going to send the information? Are you going to let all of this be involved? Included in the Oseline call?
Of course.
Okay, so you'll send us some out.
Yeah.
Thanks. Mary Jo, you're really special.
Well, you guys are special, trust
me. Well, you're very
your
special.
Heart.
Because you're special, you get to make us better special. So that's cool. I don't think
right.
I worded it properly, but that'll do.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.